This morning, we're coming back to an issue that affects all of us, the health service and what's being done to tackle waiting lists. It's only 3 months since Sinn Féin's new leader in Northern Ireland, Michelle O'Neill, announced her 10-year plan to tackle the problems facing the health service. That plan promised a comprehensive approach for addressing waiting lists. Back then, I asked Michelle O'Neill about the targets being put in place and how we were going to pay for them.
We need to address self-confidence, or public confidence in the system. And the way we're going to do that is tackle waiting lists. So, in the short term...
Because there are two, just so everyone knows, there are two aspects here of waiting lists. One is short term, one is the longer
term. So, in the short term, what we need is additional investment, and we have to make sure we're at full capacity within the health service. Alongside that, we have to buy in services from the independent sector.
And will that money...
Not where I want to be, but somewhere where I will go to in order to ensure the patients get seen in the most timely manner.
I also asked Michelle O'Neill where the money would come from back then to reduce waiting lists.
What I'm saying is I need additional funding to address the backlog. I don't think the public really mind where the money comes from, Stephen. I think the public would much prefer that they get seen in a timely manner, that they get the health service that they require and they deserve. So
in December, Stormont's budget was delayed until January. With the collapse of the executive, there's now no budget and no prospect of one. So what now for the plan to tackle waiting lists? Michelle O'Neill says she will go ahead and publish the plan within the next week. But what happens to that plan? Is the money there? Where are waiting lists going at the moment? Are they going down? It's more than likely they're still going up, isn't it? The deadline for getting a budget through for the next financial year at Stormont is the 29th of March. And unless rapid agreement post-election, the purse strings will be taken over by David Stirling, the Permanent Secretary of the Department of Finance. He will take charge of money, the equivalent of 75% of this year's budget, to keep things ticking over until power sharing is back and a budget agreed. And on the 16th of January, the top civil servant warned the Department of Health will face problems with next year's budget not agreed.
I have acknowledged that the Department of Health faces real difficulties in this scenario, because the quality of service provided will depend on the pattern of spend which the department is allowed to incur from the beginning of April. So there are some big decisions would need to be taken around that.
If you're still on a waiting list, give us a call this morning, 03030 80 55 55. Mark H. Durkin from the SDLP with us today. Roy Beggs from the UUP. Morning, Mark. Morning, Roy.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Mark. Sorry, good morning, Roy.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. Where are we at, Roy? Where do you think we're at with the health service? We've got all of this heat, no pun intended, over RHI. We've got all of these political battles going on. Meanwhile, there are our citizens sitting on waiting lists. What's happening to the waiting lists in Northern Ireland?
They're clearly getting worse and worse. And what's more, we have a Northern Ireland executive in place, ministers who have failed to accept their responsibility, and the shamble that has happened has enabled us not to have any budget, huge uncertainty with everyone who works within health and indeed the voluntary sector around the health issues in Northern Ireland, and the worst possible situation where the much lauded promises of the new system coming out, going to be announced in January. We have the £1 billion that was promised by DUP and Sinn Féin, which I don't seem to have noticed anywhere, never having materialised, everything being shelved. Really, the government parties ought to have stood back and ensured, if they are going to move towards a new election, that the jigsaw was put in place from an orderly withdrawal from the current system, the current government, so that there was a budget in place, so that their changes to health were put in place instead of the chaos that we have now.
We were being told by both Sinn Féin and the DUP before the collapse of the executive how important a new plan for health was, Mark H. Durkin, that the system simply could not cope with the pressure long-term on it. We were also being told that we would be hearing in January about a shorter-term fix for people on waiting lists. Where is it? We're now in February. Where is it? Every day matters to people sitting on these waiting lists.
Say that our health service here is in crisis, and we hear it week in, week out on your show. If it's not emergency departments, it's GPs, or it's the gross underinvestment in mental health. And yes, a long-term plan is needed. We have that plan now. That does need to be implemented to change those things, to improve those things. But there's also action needed in the short term, and that action is needed nowhere more so than here in the issue of tackling waiting lists. We have people suffering, people putting their lives on hold for up to 3-4 years in some cases. I mean, just this week, literally just this week, I had two different ladies in with me who have been told they have to wait a few years for hip operations, and both of them are actually looking or exploring the possibility of going private. I've also spoken to people in the past who've racked up £10,000 of debt to get an operation done privately because they couldn't bear the pain of waiting any longer on a waiting list here. So short-term action is needed here, and the failure to take short-term action to tackle these waiting lists is nothing short of a dereliction of duty, in my account.
Here's a caller already, John and Lauren. Morning, John.
Morning.
What situation are you in?
Well, I've been on a list probably for approaching 2 years, and in fairness to all concerned, there's obviously something going on, because I had a phone call yesterday giving me an appointment in the Royal on Sunday week, and I expressed surprise at a Sunday appointment, and they said, well, we have this programme running to reduce the waiting list. So, as I say, in fairness, there's obviously something going on, and there's obviously a budget for it.
So, did they elaborate on that? That's interesting.
No, well, I mean, I was talking to an appointment secretary who wouldn't be high up the food chain in terms of policy and politics.
And what was the outcome for you?
Well, the outcome is I've been on a waiting list. Not an urgent thing, but a thing that could develop into something that would require more resources to treat it if it's not treated now. And the outcome is, having been on the waiting list for about 2 years, I now, as of yesterday, have an appointment for Sunday week.
That's good, isn't it?
It is good. Whether that's across the board, certainly I haven't heard anybody talking about Sunday appointments, but the lady I was talking to said that this is a programme that's in process to reduce waiting lists.
We were having a look at the latest figures that are available from the Department of Health for waiting lists. These go to the end of September of last year. And given that the trend of waiting lists are going up, Mark and Roy, we can expect this to be a lot higher. Latest figures revealed to the end of September last year, 243,141 patients in Northern Ireland were waiting for a first consultant-led outpatient appointment at the end of September. That's over 7% more than at the end of June. If you look at the at some of the other figures, my goodness, it just seems to be, you know, just pick these at, if we pick these at random. General surgery, 29,779 people waiting. Roy?
If you were any one of those individuals, you would be absolutely horrified at the thought of having to wait possibly years to be seen. In many instances, early intervention makes a big difference. And I can think, for example, of the issue of diabetes, which I'd got involved in my own area, where I was being told there wasn't this early intervention, early support. And as a result, you're three times more likely to have an amputation in the Northern Trust area than, for instance, the Western Trust. And thankfully, a successful pilot has run out and reduced amputations by 90%. Great. But why is it not out faster, out everywhere, including my East Antrim constituency? Surely that type of scheme, which is much more beneficial to patients, it's better for them. It actually also saves the health service money, because you don't have to pay for the surgery, for the ongoing support, the provision of physiotherapy. Let's get in with early intervention, provide that care, deal with issues that arise right at the start, and allow patients to get on with their lives.
Paul McGrath with us this morning. Morning to you, Paul.
Stephen, how are you?
Go ahead, Paul.
Stephen, good morning to the two boys as well, Ryan and Mark.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. I was chatting to your researcher there, Stephen, And to be honest with you, I don't know whether the blood's boiling or I'm just thinking our country's gone mad. Because when you analyse it and look down and look at it properly, this past 68 weeks, your show has focused on, obviously, the RHI debacle, and in this past 3 or 4 days, the problems with racism and Muslims in the north here. And that's very good. In that time, Stormont has come down. The ministers that were in post have vacated their posts. So we're left with money that the British government is providing us that's sitting there idle because there's no one there to spend it. Now, at the minute we have this RHI thing going on, where there's potentially 6 million taxpayers' money that's going to be paid out, how would that benefit our health system if that was afforded to the health system? You know, we have people that are sitting on waiting lists. The two guys have alluded to it there. There's people that are sitting on waiting lists for months, for years. Cancer patients, kids with leukemia, and, you know, we have no one running this company at the minute. We have had, I think it was Edwin Coutts that was in the health system, or the health minister before, Michelle O'Neill. He probably had things in place. Sinn Féin minister came in and maybe implemented some of them things and done away with some of them things. But it seems to me, Stephen, it's tit for tat, and it goes back to the withdrawing of the 50,000 for the Gael talk. It provoked a response, and then it was obviously given back again. The naming of an Irish D vote was taken away from a D, was taken away by a DUP minister. And all this time,
sorry, what did you say was taken away?
There was the naming of a fishing boat or some sort of vessel. It was an Irish name on it. A DUP minister came in and withdrew the name of the Irish sea boat. And all that time, we have these two guys, are two...
I think we need to stick to the point here. The point is waiting list this morning.
Right, well, Stephen, basically, the money's there. There's been issues put in, or things put in place. And we have no one to basically say, right, well, this is where the money's going to go.
Thank you. Dr. George O'Neill with us this morning. George, good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning to you, George. You're a GP.
I am, yes.
What sense are you getting on the ground as to how tight things are for patients that need to be seen within specialities?
Well, we've always had difficulties, and especially in certain specialties, for example, orthopaedics. And that was really due to the fact that we don't have enough orthopaedic surgeons. We have an ageing population who are requiring more hip and knee replacements. So that's always been a problem with us. But because of the vacuum at present, this is likely to get worse. Now, we've had so many reports. We had the Ben Gore report recently. And for the first time in my 40 years in the health service, we had an expert report. And at the same time, we had a ministerial response. This was unheard of. And the 18 time-specific action points that the minister come off with really raised the morale throughout the whole of the health service and with everyone, because it was going to address first waiting lists. It was then going to address the problems in the area I'm in, the gross underfunding in primary care, the lack of GPs, the lack of health visitors, district nurses, social workers. This was going to be addressed, and now suddenly that has stopped. And, Stephen, I'm not an expert in this. I'm not a politician, but my understanding is the minister is still in office. Why can't she be in power? Why can't she implement some of this stuff? Because I'm sure the money...
Well, because she needed money, didn't she?
Yeah, but there is a budget of somewhere.
I think Sinn Féin are coming on this morning, so we can ask them, but
well,
she needed money.
I would like to see the minister. She's in office until the day of the election, and she can implement some of this stuff. And my hope is that she will do this, because certainly we are facing, in health and social care, a situation which is unprecedented. In the time that I've been about, the difficulties, especially, and remember, Stephen, 95% of your contacts with the health service are with primary care in its broadest sense. That's GPs, district nurses, community staff. This is crumbling as we speak. And unless there's some investment and somebody takes a handle on this, this is going to fall apart.
We asked the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Michael McBride, we asked Dr. McBride, what impact will the collapse of the executive have on waiting lists in Northern Ireland? He said, as we're in Purdah, it's inappropriate for him to comment at this stage. We asked him, are there any interim measures that he could recommend to improve waiting lists until government resumes in Northern Ireland? He said, as we're in Purdah, it's inappropriate for him to comment at this stage. We asked Dr. McBride, are you prepared to continue on the commitments made by Michelle O'Neill's 10-year vision announced in October? That's what you're talking about, George.
I am indeed, yes.
He said, as we're in Purdah, it's inappropriate for him to comment on this stage. So the Chief Medical Officer can't say anything about waiting lists in Northern Ireland.
Well, isn't it just as well? I'm not in Purdah. We really have to look at this. And all of my you go right across the health and social care, be it a hospital consultant, be a district nurse, be it a community deliverer of services, be it a GP, you will find, and even our reception staff are under pressure now trying to find out when the appointments are available, what's going to happen, dealing with people who are waiting and finding that they're waiting longer and longer. The whole of the service we have here needs to be redesigned and redelivered in a different way. And this minister was willing to do this. And I mean, she talked about stabilisation, transformation and reconfiguration. I mean, these were all, I mean, it's all down in this paper that she produced. And we really need to deliver it if we want to improve the outcomes for all of us. Because all of us at some time will be, are have been patients.
Given that our Chief Medical Officer in our country, stay there, George, Mark H. Durkin, given that the Chief Medical Officer can't say anything in this Purdah period, or at least that's his position, we then went to the Department of Health and we said, what are the projections for waiting lists over the next 2 years? And have these been revised since the collapse of the executive? Just to get a sense of where we're at, because we need to know where we're at. Department of Health say they don't collate figures on projections for waiting lists. They don't collate figures on, they don't project, they don't look ahead. They don't scheme and think, well, okay, if it's been, if the trend has been whatever percentage uplift in the last 3 to 6 months, what will it be in the future? They're telling us that they don't do any future projections whatsoever for waiting lists.
Well, I find it difficult to believe that they are incapable of doing such.
Well, they've told us they don't do it.
Not willing to share them with you. I think Paul that was on.
Let me just finish the response to that. To be fair to them, Department of Health does not collate figures and projections for waiting lists. How, well, first question: why not? But they say, however, demand for elective care services currently exceeds capacity. That's why the minister's committed to publishing a plan to address this unsustainable and unacceptable position. We then asked how much was Michelle O'Neill asking for from the executive to implement her plan to cut waiting lists. Budget discussions say the Department of Health are a confidential matter and are subject to consideration by the executive. Well, there is no executive.
Paul and Dr. O'Neill have made some good points there. The health service shouldn't suffer because of bad politics. It shouldn't be about politics. It's about patients. It's about people. It's about supporting staff, as Dr. O'Neill outlined.
Well, I note that the SLP haven't taken the health ministry in 19 years.
Well, you know, I...
That's how important it is to your party.
Well, it's extremely important to our party. We'd agreed to take the politics out of health. All parties have been working together, supporting the minister and trying to get these very necessary changes implemented. But obviously, she's become distracted by other events over the past month or so. I think Paul that was on there also was quite right to make the link between the health service and the budgetary difficulties there and the RHI. Now, Sinn Féin and the DUP have actually colluded to do away with monitoring rounds, to do away with any transparency around budgets within the departments.
Well, they would deny that, that they've colluded.
We aren't even able to scrutinise what the health minister is looking for from the executive. So it's not just confidential in terms of giving the information to you, Stephen. They're not giving it to us as a scrutiny committee either. And it's my firm belief that those monitoring rounds or that process was done away with to hide the hole. The gaping hole in public finances that's been created by this RHI fiasco.
Dr. George O'Neill, well, they would deny that too, wouldn't they? Dr. George O'Neill.
Let them.
Are you concerned as to, in this period where there is political instability in Northern Ireland, as to what is going to actually happen to the people who matter, patients on the ground?
Absolutely, Stephen. And we need someone to take charge of this. And with the greatest respect to the politicians, I mean, I've always taken the view you cannot have politicians micromanaging health and social care. We need a chief executive who's absolute authority over day-to-day operational matters. The politicians certainly be involved in strategy and high-powered stuff, but the day-to-day running of the health service should be left to preferably a clinician, an expert.
Well, that's why we put some questions. That's why we tried to ask Dr. McBride, the chief medical officer, of his sense of where we're currently at. And you know, he said he's not able to comment at all.
Well, I can't comment on that at all. I have to take him at his word that he can't because of the election. And I think he has to be cautious. He is basically a civil servant, and civil servants are quite rightly removed from the political arena during the time that we're coming up to an election. So we've got to realise the position that he's in. But certainly I can tell you, my GP colleagues will tell you, that we are having great challenges and great difficulties. There's a lot of hope on the horizon. Pharmacists are going into general practice. We were promised each practice a district nurse, named district nurse, social worker. We were named that the health visitor would be attached to our practice. This is all down in these 18 points that the minister came up with. This raised the morale. People were hopeful. But now that is gone because at the moment we're watching practices close. We're watching patients hunting around trying to find doctors. And this is unacceptable in the present time. And, I mean, it's my understanding the executive were willing to invest money before it collapsed and that the minister had the capability of making significant investments both in waiting lists and in primary care.
If the executive does not return after the election, where will that leave the health service?
Well, I think we probably go back to a direct royal minister and we'll have an oligarchy of senior civil servants deciding policy and implementing it.